Thank you for listening to the Pillar Podcast, where we cover a wide variety of content pertinent to pastors who value Reformed theology, Baptist distinctives, and the primacy of the local church and missions. Visit thepillarnetwork.com for more info.
Well, welcome to the Pillar Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about the origin story of the Pillar Network. And I have with me the founders, Dwayne Milioni and Bill Curtis. You guys obviously been there from the beginning, pastors, authors, professors, a lot we could say. We're going to actually ask you some questions just to get to know you and also know how kind of y'all, you know, jumped into this story project. So let's jump in. Bill, I'll start with you. Tell us just a little bit about yourself, how you came to know the Lord, and then how you got into ministry.
Well, thank you for having us on, Nate. Appreciate that. I was blessed that my dad became a Christian in his early 30s, and that decision in his life was transformative for our family, as you might imagine. Because of that, our family commenced on a journey of faith that led me to faith in Christ. And so I was blessed to grow up in a Christian home, attend a Christian university. And then in my 20s, began to sense that God might be leading us into ministry, and been blessed now 36 years serving the Lord in ministry, and the last 22 at a church I was blessed to plant called Cornerstone.
You're from all over, right?
Yeah. My dad was in the FBI. So okay. Pittsburgh, Sacramento, Chattanooga.
Yeah. So when I met you, I knew you liked Tennessee, the Volunteers, and then I knew you liked San Francisco. So at first I thought, do you just pick the teams that win, but you pick Tennessee. So obviously you don't pick the teams that win, but have an eclectic background and like, so yeah. I want to ask more questions in a minute about specifically how you got to know Dwayne, but Dwayne, tell us about you, how you came to know the Lord, called a ministry, even just kind of what your path was to get to where you're at now.
I'm super excited now that I get to shout out Michigan and you'll have to affirm me. Mom came to know the Lord at Temple Baptist Church, Detroit. So that's a very significant independent Baptist church. Dad's family were immigrants from Italy. They left Catholicism. Pretty rough time growing up. My dad got saved in the Navy during the Korean War, came back to Temple, found Temple, met my mom. And so I was raised in an independent Baptist church, came to know the Lord as a late child, older child. Bit of struggle here and there, just a lot of things. Prodigal life for a while, but God is by his grace. Promises perseverance in my life. And was really, as I was applying to medical school, that God did a great work in my life and started direct me towards ministry. I was even post-seminary before I had decided that I wanted to be a pastor, and that's what God wanted, and wanted to do further studies. So God provided a means for me to come to Southeastern. And then I started teaching right away, doing my work, and then Open Door was opened up. And little church meeting in elementary school, we did that 6 years and then built a building. So, yeah, just celebrated 25 years at Open Door and a little bit, few more than that at Southeastern. And I'm blessed to see Pillar happen.
Amen. So y'all both are PhDs in preaching. And I think that's sort of how y'all got to know each other. So tell us a little bit about your PhD, what you wrote on, and then same for you, Dwayne, and then tell us how y'all met.
Okay. So I was blessed to be a part of the very first class of homiletics guys in the early days of Southeastern's PhD program. And in the midst of those studies, I have a background in rhetoric. And so I've always been interested in that kind of side of the study of homiletics, and was blessed to be able to do a rhetorical analysis of a famed English evangelist named Gypsy Smith. So it was a great, great study.
And y'all say those days were rigorous at Southeastern. Yeah.
They were rigorous. Yes, they were.
It was like faculty would come and you had to present a paper or something like that and they would all listen to it. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. That sounds,
yeah,
that
it was intense.
Amazing. Yeah. Sounds amazing. Dwayne, what about you?
Yeah. It was Wild West back then. I'd become Reformed at Liberty University, by the way. And so I applied to Southern and got accepted, but the guy I was going to work with as a major prof, he booked it. And so I was left with no place to go. So I had met Paige Patterson, and he invited me to come to Southeastern because they were just starting a program, and I weaseled my way in late, which is how I got to know Bill in the same, that first cohort they had. I have a master's in counseling along with my MDiv, and I was started teaching counseling at Southeastern. And so my dissertation was on a guy named Harry Emerson Fosdick, who was the most listened to Baptist preacher for the first half of the 20th century, super liberal guy. And I was analyzing how he introduced humanistic psychology into preaching, which still permeates to this day. So he's the genesis of the psychobabble we have in our churches. Anyways, I just did that analysis of his preaching. And that was my initial research.
How did you get reformed at Liberty?
We found a Southern Baptist church that was preaching expositorially, and it blew me away. I never heard expository preaching before in my life. Growing up with topical preaching, I was enamored with it. And so we joined that church. So now that was my first Southern Baptist church. And 3 years later, they invite me on staff. So it was my first pastoral experience. And as I was teaching at the church expositionally, it was clear to me that the doctrines of grace are throughout the scriptures. And the church was kind of going through a reformation as well. So I was kind of on this journey with them.
I had been in, you know, growing up, I'd been around what we now call jokingly cage stage Calvinist. And so there was a turnoff. You know, I obviously knew parts of the Bible, but it was a turnoff. And then actually it was your expository preaching of John that was what was most helpful to me, because it seems obvious in the text, but it was, I said this at a conference last week, it was helpful to be around people who weren't mad about it.
Yeah.
Like they, right. It was actually the doctrines of grace made everybody happy.
Yeah.
And gracious.
Yeah.
And so super helpful, obviously, to my life and life changing. Bill, what about you? How did you sort of develop your theological convictions, certainly about preaching, but also Reformed theology and so forth?
Yeah, well, interestingly, Duane and I have a lot of things in common, including the fact that we were both raised in independent fundamental Baptist churches. So I had never heard an expository sermon growing up, and I had never heard about the doctrines of grace in my whole life. And I went to a Christian college that was independent, so we never heard it there. So I was really first exposed at Southeastern when I came. And it was, I'll be honest, it was quite a shock to my system to, first of all, realize how much I didn't know, but then have really everything I thought I knew begin to be called into question. Duane was a huge help to me in that through the years, just somebody I could talk to about it, knew a lot more than I did at that point. I'd already been on that journey. So it really came through my MDiv and PhD studies that God, you know, confirmed in my life that. Now, I, you know, because we grew up in IFB and it was so legalistic, many of our friends abandoned the church, to be honest. But for me, thankfully, I just decided to go to the Bible and try to figure out if these things were true. And just before we came to seminary, I was finishing my master's in rhetoric at UT Chattanooga. We started attending a church called Willam Park, where a guy named Wayne Barber was the pastor. And I didn't know Wayne from anywhere, but Spiros Zodiades was in that church. K. Arthur was in that church. And for 6 months before we came to Southeastern, he was teaching through the book of Ephesians. And I'd never heard anything like it. I was like, where has this been my whole life? And I'm almost 30 years old. So I said, I don't know what this is, but that's what I have to learn how to do. And that kind of began our journey.
So let's talk then just about Pillar. I mean, that's what we want to kind of hit on the origins of this. Why? So when did you get excited about church planning? Why start something like Pillar? What was going on in your churches? Kind of what was going on in larger evangelicalism and the SBC? Kind of just talk us through how this got going.
So I find myself at a church, a little over 100 members, and 75% of them are attached to Southeastern, which was crazy. And so I have tons of students. And I'm 34. I'm a new lead pastor, trying to figure it out. And I don't have a means to help place graduates from Southeastern that I've come to know and love. There was really no good way for these sharp guys to find something healthy as they begin learning pastoral ministry. I mean, back in the day, it was like, if you had a foot in the door somewhere, okay, then you could go there and learn. But for most guys, they would put their resumes out. Only church that would take them would be a super unhealthy church. They would go and get killed, you know, wipe off the dust and move on. Or they'd quit. Or their wives would say, I'm not doing that again. And I kept thinking, there's got to be a better way. And the other thing was, so I'm 34. I'm a little bit older than most graduates. These guys weren't ready. They were not ready to face the world. And so I started an internship. And I actually asked Southeastern if I could get some credit to do it, and which became Equip, which is not a thing now. Just kind of a finishing school, basically. You know, you went through it. It's just called a shepherd's training. And because I wanted to spend a couple more years with guys, and plus I wanted to figure out, how can I place you well? And so Sean Cordell was at my church. I love Sean. And he had gone to Bethlehem to do a residency, came back. And we just said, let's plant a church downtown Raleigh and just see how it goes. And I just invited all of my church to move downtown, which 25% of them did, and 25% of my budget. Hadn't thought through that. Really hadn't thought through that. And we had just moved into our building that we had bought. And it felt so right. It just really connected to do this. And I said, okay, I want to keep doing this. So I had this great idea. I'm going to start a local association in North Carolina. But all we're going to do is plant churches. We're going to have no DOM, no building. We're just going to plant churches. Because look, I'm a Southern Baptist now, just less than a handful of years. And it made sense to me, right? Let's just plant churches again. So I go down to the state convention and I pitch this idea, great idea. They said, no, you can't do that. Like, no, not even interested. No, you can't start an association. No, you can't plant churches. And I thought, well, why not? I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I couldn't work with our association in Raleigh because the head of it was a moderate. Just, we weren't going to work. And things were happening around Wake Forest to become more conservative. I said, I've got some buddies and we're going to plant churches. No, just shut me down. Shut. I mean, later, a couple years later, I realized I could have just done it anyway. I didn't know the rules of being a Southern Baptist back then. And I really, honestly, did not understand the cooperative program very well. I just wanted to denominate. I wanted to cooperate. That's what I wanted to do. And I planted a couple of churches out of Open Door, but I was like, I can't do this. I can't keep doing it. I've got too many sharp students. So I called Bill and I said, Bill, let's plant a church together. And maybe you can share up to that point. We can talk about
it. And all this was, I mean, this is before... Okay. Really, like kind of the craze of church planting started really
there's
hit.
There's no craze.
Acts 29 wasn't around. No. And like there was.
We are just on the brink of the young, restless reform movement. So this is just on the brink of it where we're kind of coming in.
Yeah. So one of the things that was very helpful to us as we began this journey was Dwayne's essentially doing a revitalization in his church, and I have planted Cornerstone now. So I'm doing a plant, which was the third plant in my ministry I'd had a chance to be a part of. So I was starting to figure some things out about that. And so he calls me, and of course, we talked all the time anyway about these topics, but I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I'll get with our state convention, see if I can get some money. Let's plant a church in Myrtle Beach. They keep saying we need churches in Myrtle Beach. Let's do that. Okay. So I reach out again. I mean, I'd been a Southern Baptist longer than Dwayne, but at this point in my journey, still not a whole lot of understanding about how things work. I just figured everybody wants a church, plant church. Everybody be happy about that. So I get with my state, because I hear we got money for that, and I ask, hey, can I get some money for this church plant? We're going to do this. And we got a guy. The whole thing's set, got a core team, like we're ready. Can I get some of that money you've got? I said, well, how about we send a couple guys down to talk to you about it? I said, man, that'd be great. I'll never forget it, Nate. These three guys came in, a state guy and two pastors, and spent 30 minutes just rebuking me about local churches don't plant churches, our state convention plants churches, we're not going to give you money, this is a bad idea, we don't want you to do it. And so I remember that meeting. I said, well, okay, first, thanks for coming. Second, feel free to leave because we're going to plant a church. Right. I mean, you don't want to help. It's okay. I don't get that, but we'll. So that kind of, he'd gone to North Carolina. They said no. I went to mine at South Carolina. They said no. Now, to their credit, they're much more understanding. They've had time to grow out of that. And I praise God for that. But way back in the early 2000s, that was not their posture. And so we just said, okay, well, let's just, it's us. We'll just do it together and see if we can plant a church. Yeah.
And so then from that point, you are like, hey, this is an idea. It's obviously not called Pillar at that point. I want to talk about NACPF because I was still around Open Door at the time when y'all started to talk through this. So kind of when y'all started to formulate it, what are you thinking?
So the church plant in Myrtle Beach was a huge learning curve for us. We made so many mistakes. And I mean, it basically was a failure. Several hundred thousand dollars later in time and effort and so many things. But we felt like this is right. I mean, like it did not go well.
Yeah, this is New Testament cooperation. So
we couldn't figure out like what is a sending church? Who should send? How does the other church cooperate? How do we deal with money? How do we just all, it was 100 things we didn't know, but we
learned.
We learned.
We did.
And we're like, let's try it again. And so Tanner Turley went through my internship and he was the guy. And he had put together a team we felt good about. And I went to Bill like, okay, I'm sorry. Let's do this again. I need your money. and we met the Chasteens because John was on Tanner's team and Jeremy is at Crosspoint. And we invited Crosspoint and they said, we're in. So now we got three churches and we send a healthy team, much better prepared. And we had a better sense of sending and supporting and all of that.
Who would be a good number one as opposed to not?
Right.
That was a big learning curve.
And so we send Tanner up to Medford and it's a win. It's a win. And we, the three churches are like, we like this. Well, then Anthony's ready to go to Phoenix. And then soon Jose's ready to go to Miami. And Bill's working on a guy to send to Seattle. And Jeremy's working on a guy to plant. And all of a sudden, us three churches kind of, we're just planting. And we're saying, how do you want to help? How do you want to help? We'll give money. I've got a person that wants to go. I've got a lead guy. And we just, again, we're still making a lot of mistakes. But we're starting to figure out the dynamics of it. Next thing you know, we got 11 churches. Like 11.
And mainly those are just relationship out of those three churches is how those 11 kind of came out.
So now we've got 11 churches. And
we're still not anything.
No.
We're just kind of...
There's a fellowship,
right?
We can tell something's happening. So my financial secretary comes to me and says, "Okay, we cannot handle the money. You've got $1 million coming through our $500,000 a year budget." I says, "If we get audited, it'll be a nightmare." So there was a business guy in my church, Ryan Swisher. Shout out, he was huge in this. And Ryan comes to me and says, "We need to start a foundation." And what we can do is we can organize 501c3. You have to get a board and we can run all the money through that. And so I said, that sounds good, I guess. Never done that before, but it would allow the churches to join and everything would be legit and financially accountable. And so we'll come up with a name, North American Church Planting Foundation.
And I'd like to add at this point that I hated it then and I voiced it and I'm really glad.
Well, you know,
it's not that way anymore.
It's very true.
In the origin story in the Mars Hill podcast, they recreated history. So you're not recreating history right now, right?
No, they're not. Is that true?
It's
very true.
He didn't like it from the beginning. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, Ryan really wanted it to be a foundation, not for churches to say, give me money, but for business individuals, which, by the way, if any business individuals listen to this, we're all about starting a foundation.
We still can start.
We can still do that.
We will receive your money.
One day, we will have a foundation for Pillar. Just not yet.
Yeah.
So the NACPF started and we gathered for an annual event, met in, you know, a little room at my church. And we just started meeting. And
I mean,
really,
a little room.
Little
tiny. It's not much bigger than this boardroom right here.
No. But we.
Oh, that was sweet.
I remember that room. Yeah.
And the thing we're trying to do, Nate, as first is figure out our DNA. Let's just kind of figure out our DNA. So as we're planting, and because now we're thinking, can we invite other churches in to help us? And so the two things that were important were our DNA. And then it's like, how tight should we be so we're all like-minded without being so tight that we can't really have a sense of freedom within the autonomous nature of the local church? And we still, you know that, as you're leading now, we keep having this discussion, how tight.
Every good organization should have that.
Yeah.
That tension.
Oh, and we're still having that. Should we be SBC only? We have that conversation every year. We had it then. And so we're just kind of every year working through this, developed a board, and we went from 11 to 33. And we got to the point where we needed someone to look over the affairs. And Zach Nelson was my youth minister, and he was kind of done with youth ministry. So I said, Zach, would you come to the NACPF and be a director? He said, I would love that. I said, okay, because he had from the beginning seen the churches and close friends with a lot of planters. I said, but I don't have any money for you. So he raises money for 3 years. And Zach did a fantastic job, you know, getting us to the point where you took over. And then we went from 33 to 100. But then when you came in, we went just.
It's so funny when we're sharing the story, like when we're recruiting a church or meeting with their elders or something, and we bring up, it used to be called NACPF and now it's Pillar. They all, everybody kind of laughs and is like, yeah, that makes sense to change the name.
You know, hey, so like, this story's got to be told though. Yeah. Dwayne and I were sorting this all out during our PhD work. At least once a week, we went to Olive Garden on Capitol Boulevard for lunch because we could get cheap soup and salad.
Which I didn't love, which I don't advocate. But.
And all the breadsticks we could eat.
Yeah,
so we, at least once a week, we had to go to the garden. So, but we're both visual guys. So we love charts and we love like fleshing things out where it can be seen. So we've been doing this and we still do it all the time. But on that particular day, we were brainstorming about like if we did a thing, what would be the ideas that we might want to gather around, you know? So as he would often do, he'd pull his space pen out of his pocket, grab a napkin off the deal, and we just started brainstorming. And those six things that still kind of form the basis of our cooperation were first written on a napkin at Olive Garden when we were just kind of thinking about, you know, what can keep us close but won't suffocate the churches that are there. And it's been beautiful to see.
And you don't know how many times we're in conversations with a, you know, potential church and they look at that, you know, we now have it like in a trifold and they look at it and they're like, those six things, that's us. You know, it's been so encouraging. How did, obviously the name Pillar comes from 1 Timothy 3, but how did that conversation take place?
So we, within the NACPF, right? We decided that we were going to have a pillar network and a Philippian network. And the Philippian network would be outside support. The pillar network would be the churches, right? And so 1 Timothy 3:15 had really been on my mind. And again, a lot of kind of our story is this independent Baptist nature that we have, the autonomy of the local church. Like the mission of the church rests on us. We were still trying to figure out how to relate in the broader SBC world, which, by the way, we were actually enjoying the broader SBC world. But we never, ever thought that the broader SBC world or its agencies plants churches. So we felt the church is God's house, God's family, with the responsibility to ground churches, local churches everywhere in the world, that they become the pillars of God's truth. So it just was natural for us to use that language. And then, yes, I should have started with that name. But when we changed, it really made sense.
Yeah. And Dwayne ran it by me. And I said something like, honestly, you could pick any name anywhere, and I will say yes. If it's different, Like, that's all I need to know, you know. Well, what do you think about Pillar? I love it. I love it. Let's do it. You know, so it's been great.
Yeah. At least it wasn't the Laodicea network, but let me ask a couple more questions. And because we get this question a lot. We are SBC only in the States, in the United States, where you can be. We're very thankful for that. We're not trying to be a competitor to NAM, but that question gets asked a lot. So that had to have been in your mind early on. Answer that question. Are we a competitor to NAM?
No, absolutely not. And we've felt the tension on both sides of this. So networks became a thing. We had started one, and then there were other networks popping up, and we've always been pro network because we feel there's something about an affinity based group of churches that equates to the associationalism of the SBC. Right? It's just another way to associate, not geographically, but more theologically. So it just made sense to us. But we felt, and we're, you know, probably loyal to a fault, we felt like we had benefited so much from Southeastern, and we were committed to being loyal to the SBC, that we wanted to stay in it. And yet we just wanted still to do our own thing because we're autonomous churches. So we start planning churches and form this network, and it did feel like competition for some of our denominational friends and foes. And they just didn't really know what to do with us, right? You know this.
Sure.
That both NAM and the IMB they never really had a place for us because we were Southern Baptists only. We weren't like other networks that, you know, look, and our church plants, we really encourage our church plants not to be NASCARs, right? Have all these labels and stickers and networks. Let's just stay honed in, right? In marriage, have a covenant relationship, stick to it. So yeah, it was really challenging to figure out for the agencies to figure out who we were. And we kept saying, look, we're just a very narrow group of Southern Baptists that are plant churches together. And really, we just, why don't you support us financially? You don't have to, but if you want to, please do. And it has taken until, I mean, even you coming for us to, I think, finally get to the place where they feel comfortable with our network as not a competitor, but as an ally. I mean, that's kind of the nice version.
No, I think that's right. I think that's exactly how it's been. And the good news is, you know, the change started. So I was a trustee at NAM for 8 years during some tumultuous times. And Dr. Record stepped out and Dr. Jeff Hammond came in. And though his tenure was brief, he was really the first person who'd come to NAM who said out loud, churches plant churches. And he had come out of the Virginia Conservative Convention and they were all about church planting. Well, I remember just having the biggest smile on my face first time he said that in a trustee meeting, began to say, we're going to begin to move that way. You know, churches plant churches. Yes, that's what we've been saying for so long. And of course, thankfully, Dr. Ezell has carried that forward. He's very passionate about that as well, which I love about his ministry at NAM. And so I just think sometimes, you know, when something is new and you don't have a track record and folks aren't sure where you've been, where you're actually heading, that it's harder to put your stamp on something. And I get that totally. So I don't feel any frustration with NAM about that at all. But I'm very thankful that as time has gone by, it feels as if and they're much more comfortable with who we are. And they've been very helpful to sure. many of our church plants, which I used to say thankful for.
Yeah, I used to say, because, you know, back when NAM mainly had a ascend S-E-S-E-N-D strategy, most of our churches that were pillar churches in those major cities all partnered with NAM. And then now that they basically partner anywhere, almost every one of the pillar's plants also partners with NAM. And so we don't see it as a competitor. And actually, as of this recording, we've just finalized a MOU partnership with the IMB. We're in conversations about the same sort of thing with NAM. And so when we get asked that question, we want to be very clear. Like, we see ourselves more, as Dwayne said, an affinity-based Baptist association that's not bound by geography, but by theology,
right,
that can easily play under the BFNM tent of the SBC. And so any final thoughts? Obviously, you know, y'all's fingerprints are all over this network, but also in some ways y'all have also not always demanded the stage and things like that. So y'all have been very like giving away of your influence into the network, but just any final thoughts? So thankful for what y'all have done. But yeah, just want to leave it with that.
We didn't plan this. What is happening right now with Pillar is a God thing. And I don't use that language often. It really is a God thing. You know, we just got back from Colombia. It's a God thing. What's happening? So all glory be to God. You know, Bill and I are committed to our local churches. That really is the stage where we want. Being a part of Pillar, founding Pillar, watching Pillar grow, having any influence or help that we can on a board level, we're super comfortable there. And we just love seeing new preachers every year at Unite. It's just, I say this, you know, in our preaching circles, I even say this to other network guys. I said, I would love to have a preaching contest. Any network, anywhere, let me choose 10 Pillar pastors and you get your top 10 and let's go at it. You know, because I just love the fact that we're so committed to the word and we're based on the word. We're thrilled to see what God has done. We're so confident in you and your team that you're building. We're not dead yet. And as much as we can do to help younger guys that are starting out, that's really the role that we see ourselves in. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, Nate, you probably couldn't find two more unlikely guys to first of all become best buds from different situations and yet so similar, you know, and then to, you know, have something that we love to do. I'll be blessed of the Lord the way that it is. It's hard to put into words. If I was going to attribute it to anything, I think it would be the fact that we didn't start to do what we did because we were after some type of platform. I mean, we've never sought that. We've never been trying to be a player. We've never been climbers. We love the churches where God has us. We love seeing churches like that take life in other places. We love helping as we can, as much as we can in our own ways through our church plants. We've been partnering to plant churches together for 20 years now. In fact, we still got three church plants that we're currently co-sponsoring, if you will, today. You know, so I mean, this is our life. But I think maybe the Lord has been kind to bless it because the whole thing grew out of a place that was really healthy at the beginning. And he's been kind to bless it because by his grace, we've sought to keep it that way.
Amen. Yeah. I mean, obviously we talk a lot about the local church being both the means and the end of mission. And you guys have helped start something that is committed to that. And it's been just a blessing to be a part. So it's also just always encouraging to hear the story and to bring up the NACPF if I can. So, and we thank you guys for listening to the Pillar podcast.
The Pillar Network exists to equip, plant, and revitalize churches all over the world, sharing a common DNA of biblical authority, gospel proclamation, live expository preaching, elder-led congregationalism, confessionally baptistic theology, and kingdom-minded cooperation. To connect with us, visit thepillarnetwork.com.